Everybody, happy Wednesday. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets, presented by So Rare, right here on Game Plus Network. Also, Lavender FTN Network YouTube page. You're listening on iTunes and Spotify. You guys know the drill. Always looking for a solid like, review, subscribe. Any questions, you can leave them there. If you are watching on Game Plus Network, you guys are well aware. You can always come over and have a question for the show, something you'd like to see. You know, it is kind of fantasy football season. We're inching a little bit closer to fantasy football season. So if you have any keeper league stuff, any, you know, rookie questions, a player you want, you know, me or somebody else to evaluate, we can dive into all of that stuff here on Mean Streets. This show is absolutely for you guys. And we got a great one lined up, but I'll let you guys be the judge. But you can leave the comments here in the YouTube section. Reach out at Chris Meany on the Twitter machine, meanstreetsftn@gmail.com. The U.S. Open, the 123rd edition of the U.S. Open, tees off tomorrow at Los Angeles Country Club. We got our guy Alex Blickel, the FSWA Golf Writer of the Year. He's the co-host of Pro Versus Pro, which you can catch for free on our FTN Network YouTube page. We are going to dive into a few things. We're going to talk about the course. Looks pretty tough, not going to lie. Some thick rough, not going to lie. Saw some videos. Looks like it's going to be a challenging weekend for these golfers. Of course, we're going to dive into maybe, you know, we'll take a look at the top of the board from a betting standpoint, maybe get some sleepers in there, look at it from a PGA DFS angle. Blickel's hanging by, so we'll get to that in a little bit. We have not one, but two guests lined up for you today here on Mean Streets. We got our guy, Scott Spratt of FTN Fantasy, FTN Bets, FTN Daily, FTN Network. Stopping by, we're going to continue the team previews. We started off pretty strong last week, I think, with the Philadelphia Eagles. It was a little bit of a, you know, it was obviously close to home. We are going in a completely different direction here, and we're going to talk about the Carolina Panthers. They're intriguing from a fantasy standpoint for sure. We've talked a lot about stacks, cheap stacks in best ball. They're one, you know, you got a rookie quarterback in Bryce Young, who is now officially taking first team reps with the squad. You knew it was only a matter of time before that was going to happen. Andy Dalton, come on, get out of here. Miles Sanders on the squad as well. Adam Thielen, DJ Chark, Frank Reich, former Panther, now head coach of the Carolina Panthers. They were super aggressive making the trade. You know, this time last year, Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore. So a lot of, you know, big name players gone from the squad and maybe some uncertainty from a fantasy standpoint. But a lot of these players that I mentioned, even Jonathan Ringo is a nice little young rookie wide receiver that they drafted this past year. All of these players going fairly late in fantasy football drafts. So we'll talk about them from a betting standpoint. We'll take a look at their NFL schedule. They have a 7.5 win total, but we'll also talk about what this offense could look like in what really is a wide open division inside the NFC South. MLB went pretty good yesterday, so we'll dive into that as well. Corbin Burns, we got the over 7.5 strikeouts at plus 120. As we said yesterday, it was a really slow start for Corbin Burns, but over the last five or six starts, this guy's been hot fire. What's that? 7+ strikeouts in 7 of his last 8 outings, I do believe, and he's topped 7 in 3 of his last 4. So he's looking really like the old Corbin Burns, still struggling with some walks, but he was really good yesterday. And the Reds, again, Vegas sleeping on the Cincinnati Reds team. They continue to cash on their team totals as well. So we'll dive into some baseball stuff. And here off the top, just want to give a congrats to the Vegas Golden Knights. Got it done last night, 9-3. Are you kidding me? They just crushed the Panthers in all three of the home games. You know, Florida coming in shorthanded. Matthew Tkachuk, it came out yesterday that he had a fractured sternum. So he actually played, you know, a game and a half with a fractured sternum. Not only played, scored a game-tying goal, you know, in game 4. And he was fantastic, you know, all playoffs long. Paul Maurice, head coach of the Panthers, talked about Aaron Ekblad. Broke his foot in round 1. Suffered 2 separated shoulders and tore his oblique and still played. Didn't miss any time. Didn't even miss a shift. These players are in the NHL. That's why it's the hardest trophy, in my opinion, to win. It's like a battle of like who can survive. It's not the best team in the regular season. It's who can survive the battle in the postseason. And Vegas did it well. 6 years into the league, and they get themselves a Stanley Cup. What's remarkable to me about the Vegas Golden Knights is, of course, they've only been in the league for 6 years and it's expansion draft. But it's still remarkable to me that only one player on their active roster was a player that they actually drafted in the NHL draft in Nicholas Hägg. Everybody else has been, of course, you got the Misfits. It was great to see, you know, Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, Shea Theodore, Riley Smith, Braden McNabb, Bruce Cassidy started those five. Those are the Misfits there, you know, that they took in the expansion draft, but they've been super aggressive. And, you know, I joined Homestead yesterday over at the Parlay Crew, and they asked me, is this a model to, like, you know, that teams could copycat? And I'd say, like, not really. It's pretty rare. For one, they were over the cap. That's a conversation for another day. But they were over the cap, which doesn't count come playoff time. Mark Stone, who was fantastic last night with the hat trick. First hat trick in the Stanley Cup final since 1996. Peter Forsberg just so happened to come against Florida as well. Tough go, Panthers fans. But they would have been well over the cap in the regular season, but they were aggressive making trades, like traded a lot of their picks and assets and prospects to go all in, like you would in Vegas, put your chips on the table and go all in. And then they got themselves the Stanley Cup. So it's going to be super cool to see, you know, the Stanley Cup parade on the strip. Aggressive getting Mark Stone, trading, you know, Eric Branstrom, young rookie, you know, traded Nick Suzuki, Cody Glass, you know, getting Jack Eichel, you know, trading Alex Tuch, and a lot of just big name players, getting Alex Pietrangelo. And so the Vegas Golden Knights were just the best team in the Western Conference all year long, and nobody talked about them. The Edmonton Oilers were discussed. The Colorado Avalanche, defending Stanley Cup champions, were discussed. Nobody was talking about the Vegas Golden Knights. So we did get burned, Quan, yesterday a little bit with Jonathan Marchessault. We had him for the most goals and the most points in Stanley Cup finals, but Mark Stone just needed that empty net hat trick, didn't he? It was like three or four chances in his own end to get that empty net goal, and he got it, and he passed Mark Stone, or he passed Marchessault for the most goals and the most points, which we had at 13-1. So that one hurt, but we did get the 31-1 Conn Smythe pick, which we had over at FTNBets.com, which we had after the second round, May 18th. So we're happy about that. We did have him to get the Stanley Cup first after Mark Stone, which didn't work out. He gave it to the other Misfit, Riley Smith, so that was cool as well. We're going to take a look at the Stanley Cup odds a little bit later on. We'll save it for the last block. It's way too early, of course, but this is what we do on this show. We present odds across all the big four and golf as well, which we'll get into. One more time for the FTN data job. Our guy, Mike Tallis, has constructed a few interviews already. Don't be discouraged. You want to get into the business. You want to get paid to watch football. I mean, this job is absolutely for you. Foot in the door with a great company over at FTN. And FTN data, as you see, we are hiring advanced football charters. And literally, talk to Frank, a.k.a. Bank Brank, says you are getting paid to watch football. You are getting paid to watch it live, post-game football. We'll be charting some data and things like that. So as you see, if you are listening on iTunes and Spotify, it is Mike Tallis, T-A-L-A-S, at FTNnetwork.com. Send your resume. Tell them Chris Meany sent you. Scott Spratt is in the house as well, hanging by. We're going to get to the Panthers in a little bit. He's got to hang on just about 10 more minutes, Scott, because we're going to bring in the Golf Writer of the Year over at FSWA, the co-host of Pro Versus Pro. We're going to talk about the U.S. Open gets underway tomorrow. That's next here on Mean Streets. Alex Blickle will join us. Keep her locked. Welcome back in. You're watching Mean Streets here on Game Plus Network, live on our FTN Network YouTube page. We're bringing Alex Blickle of FTN. Of course, you can catch all of his work over at FTN Bets, FTN Daily, FTN Fantasy. And tomorrow's a big one, right? You got the U.S. Open getting underway tomorrow, the 123rd edition, a Los Angeles Country Club, looking pretty tough. Seen some videos of some just wild rough. It's like, you know, you always see those videos, especially I feel like for the U.S. Open every other year, right? The course is like playing super challenging, and then you see, you know, reporters or golfers go by the greens and they just little drop, and it's like, where'd the ball go? It just completely disappeared. So we're going to talk about some of the statistics you're using when you're putting together some potential DFS lineups. We're going to look at the top of the board from a betting angle, but you've already recorded Pro Versus Pro, which is live. So check that out over at FTN Network. And how'd your conversation go with your co-host Justin Bates? How'd that go?
It was a really fun one. We speculated a lot about how this course is going to test guys. And there are certainly a lot of unknowns. And part of that is because even the grass types are a little bit unknown. As the week has gone on, now we have a much clearer sense. Bent grass greens. We've got Bermuda rough, but in a lot of places, it doesn't look like your typical Bermuda rough. And then there are also instances where it's actually not Bermuda rough. It's fescue rough. So just a really, really interesting course setup for Los Angeles, and it's going to be a really fun test. I think the biggest thing about the course to realize is what Rory said, which is they kind of have a lot of freedom with how they're going to set up this golf course. And depending on how tricky, how difficult they want to set it up, we could see scores like 10 to 15 under. We could see scores like 5 over as the winner. So really, really interesting week ahead.
5 over. You mentioned Rory. Of course, he wasn't able to get the 3 in a row at the RBC Canadian Open. But man, what a finish last week. That was electrifying, wasn't it, Blickle, to see, you know, Nick Taylor and not just the putt and the walk-off, but just, you know, the drama. And I'm here for like 3-4 playoffs, like whole playoffs. I'm all about that. That was super entertaining.
It was especially fun for me because I was in D.C. at my cousin's house and my uncle is Canadian. So I was watching with him. Oh, nice. That made it just even extra exciting. What an awesome finish that was.
And what was a wild week in PGA? Like last week, you joined me on the fly with, you know, the merger and LIV and all that stuff. And I'm glad that there was something else to talk about at the RBC. Yeah. And they weren't just over, you know, it's like 2 years in a row. They just take away from the RBC Canadian Open with all this nonsense, but we're not going to talk about that. We of course are going to have some of the former LIV players and over there, and it's, everybody is just together again. And of course they would be anyways with a major. So let's just get into the odds board and we can walk through again some, you know, other statistics that you're looking at. And this is from Monday, so things have made a change here a little bit. I mean, Scottie Scheffler up at the top there at plus 750. I mean, co-runner up at, you know, the U.S. Open last year and PGA Championship a month ago. You got John Rahm there at 8-1. And we were chatting before, you know, we came in. It's like, it's the boring pick. But, I mean, the way that John Rahm has been playing here over the past couple of years and, you know, 2021 U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, Masters a couple months ago, you know, most recent win of his four this season, FedEx Cup, you know, runner. He's just the man. Spratt's like, yeah, he's in the background here. He's like, yeah, I mean, John Rahm, he's the man. Rory, George is thinking this is the time again. He's always thinking this is the time. Brooks Koepka's coming in. He's got to be one of the favorites too. The way that he has played over the past couple of majors and the success that he has had in the past that other U.S. Opens can't lay. We got Victor Hovland there, Shoffley, Colin Morikawa, Jordan Spieth, Cameron Smith, Max Homa. There was a, you know, some talk, JT's at 30-1, some longer shots on the right side of the board here. Hideki at 33-1, Day at 35, Cameron Young, 40, Hatton at 40, Sam Burns there at 50-1, Fleetwood, who was in the running there with Nick Taylor last week at 50-1. Do you want to just get the California home course, home area, narrative street talk out of the way? Is this a thing here? Because it's something that a lot of people talk about, Alex, like in the betting market and the DFS when they're picking winners, like have they had success at this course? You know, you're talking about the different greens and fescue and fairways and things. Max Homa, George told us before we got on, course record here. Like, does that come into play when you're talking about things, you know, making your bets or making your picks?
This is such a fun conversation to have. It really is. And I am definitely of the opinion that you should not be looking at geographic location in any of your golf analysis. And the place I'll start here is think about what you're implying when you say, hey, this guy always plays well in California. We should pick him to play well again here. Typically, what you're implying is that there are going to be characteristics of the course that carry over and test golfers in similar ways. Well, on an average PGA Tour week, we have all of the necessary data to say how a course is going to test a player. So if the course fit model for Riviera, for example, is similar to Torrey Pines, let's just stay in California, then okay, we're going to see some overlap in who plays well there. But it's not because they're in California. It's because the course is testing the players in similar ways. Because of that, this is actually one of the weeks where I would be a little bit more open to saying, hey, it's okay, in California, to the California guys, if you will, because we don't have the necessary data to have a course fit model on LA Country Club. The problem there is, as we've talked about already, this is such an incredibly unique golf course for Los Angeles. We don't see bent grass in Los Angeles. We don't see fescue rough and Bermuda rough in Los Angeles. And not only that, but like if you, they did a really nice flyover of this golf course. It's like a 15-minute video detailing every single hole. You can see the holes. You can hear them talk about how the holes are going to test players. This is one of the most unique golf courses in the world. I think there are maybe like 6 or 7 holes that you just don't see anything like them on any other golf course in the world, which makes this so much fun, so exciting as a fan of golf. But it also means that from an analytics standpoint, I don't think that hardly any crossover between Los Angeles Country Club and these other California courses. So why would we draw conclusions like that?
Yeah, fair. I mean, who are the Cali boys? I mean, we talk about Max. Cantlay's a UCLA product. Xander's another one who seems to get some buzz. Like, Xander's always there, dude. You know, he seems to be always hanging around on Sundays. We bring up that draft board again. Like, that seems like a pretty decent number to me at 20-1. I don't know where you're at. Like, if you're looking just at the top four and Brooks, Rory, Rahm, and Scotty, is it Rahm for you? And let's sprinkle in a little talk in DFS as well, because I feel like, you know, Scotty and Koepka, I think, are going to be pretty popular. And I know we have a new ownership page over at FTNDaily.com, you know, highlighting that.
Yeah, let's talk about the top of this board for a second, because one of the things that we have talked a number of times about whenever I've come on Mean Streets here with you is there's often like not a lot of value to be had at the top of the boards, right? And I think a perfect example this week is with John Rahm, because we at FTN have Rahm as the favorite, and not just the favorite, but he's a pretty healthy amount above anybody else in terms of win equity in our models. But we have him at around 10% to win, almost exactly 10%, in fact, which is plus 900 from an implied odds standpoint. So at plus 800, even though he's the second one on the board and we have him number one by a comfortable margin, there is no value in betting him. So the top of the board, they just squeeze so much out of it that I almost always have to get into like at minimum around the 30-1 range before I can start to find value in the outright market.
Okay, so keeping that up, Quan, outside the top 30, JT kind of scratches the surface there with Tony Finau, and there's a few dudes there at a 33-1 and DJ Fitzpatrick and Hideki. Are you living in that range then, or are you going a little bit deeper here?
There are two guys on this board that I already have outrights on. Cameron Smith, although I got him at 30-1 instead of 25-1, and he was even 33-1 at times earlier in the week. I believe the 30 is still out there. And then Sam Burns, 75-1 elsewhere, massive difference there. So I wouldn't bet him at 50, but both of these guys, they have what we call just the skill of knowing how to win. When they're in contention, they tend to get it done. Their win rates are significantly higher over the last 2 years than what you would expect just given their typical performance. So I always love those guys in the outright markets, but I'll start with Cam Smith. The thing about Cam Smith is like he has one of the most severe strokes gain profiles on tour, where his accuracy off the tee is a real issue for him. It's a problem, and it keeps him out of contention at times. It certainly caused him to miss the cut last year at the US Open. But then once he's in play, his iron play, short game, and putting, they are all world class. He might be the best player in the world, not considering off the tee play at all. And so there are two paths for him this week that I think could really catapult him to being one of the favorites. And that is, these fairways are super wide. And so there's the possibility that so many of these guys are just hitting as many fairways as they can. He's consistently hitting out of the fairway, scoring with his irons and contending that way. And then there's also a possibility, which I actually think is the more likely scenario, that these fairways play nowhere close to as wide as they actually are because they're running so fast. They have so much side-to-side slope where there are going to be holes where you have to hit an absolutely perfect drive to actually hold the fairway. Most guys end up kind of rolling out to the same spot in the rough. And if you're putting everyone in the same spot from irons and in, I'm going to give Cam Smith the nod over almost everyone in the world.
Yeah, I mean, T9 at Oak Hill. I would say I agree with you 100%. I mean, I haven't seen much of him over the past years because I didn't watch much live, but I think he's got the best short game in the game. Like hit around the green, you know, not just the approach, but like the short irons, like the short wedges, the up and downs, his putting ability. I mean, we've seen that multiple times on full display. I'm only seeing 20-1 from him. So that number is gone now, but 20-1 using our prop shop to get the best possible odds. Hey, if he wins at 20-1, you're still going to be pretty happy at the end of the day. Do you want to give a sneak into the other guy you're feeling, or do you want to dive in? We've just got a couple minutes here left before we break. Do you want to get into the DFS angle of it? Is there a sneaky DFS play or a super long shot guy that you're thinking could, you know, surprise some people as we get into maybe moving day into the weekend?
Yeah, I'll start with Sam Burns because it's actually a really quick description, and that is, when Burns has spiked historically, it's in a very specific way. It's iron prowess and putting. Whenever he's in contention, whenever he's getting his wins, you can look at those two categories and see why he was able to get the win. And for the first time in almost exactly a year, he has gained close to a full stroke per round with his irons in two consecutive events. We've been waiting for the iron play to come back around. The putting's been there all year. Now the iron play is back. To me, that says he should be in contention. And then swinging it over to a DFS perspective and also the outright market, Keegan Bradley is one of my favorite plays of the week. Josh has this phenomenal splits tool over at FTN Daily where you can look at how players have performed on hard courses, on courses with fast greens, and on courses with high missed fairway penalties, which we expect to happen or expect to have, I should say, this week. We talked about how difficult this rough is going to be. I don't think it's going to be as thick as those videos have shown all around the course. They're very clearly finding the thickest part to make the video go as viral as possible. But I think the rough is going to be really unpredictable and cause problems, especially because it looks like they have this incredibly thick rough all around these greens, particularly long. So you're going to want to be able to control the spin coming into the greens. You absolutely can't do that out of the rough. And Keegan is like the only guy under $8,000 who pops in any of those three, and he does in all three of those splits. So I think this is a phenomenal spot for Keegan Bradley. We love him in the FTN daily or in the FTN data projections across the board. 130-1 is where I got him in the outright market, but I would probably bet him all the way down to like 80-90. And from a DFS perspective, he's been too cheap and way too low owned in almost every single event he's played this year. This event's going to be no different.
Listen, one thing, there's a lot of things I love about you, dude. And there's a lot I've learned about you over the past couple of years. And yeah, I feel like Keegan Bradley's your guy. I feel like we chat him up a little bit. Like there's been a couple times, like majors, I think even the PGA players, we talked about him as like a top 20. Mm-hmm. And this, he's just a guy that every time we talk about him, he seems to do well. Like, so you're on to something. Top 20 finish plus 320, top 30 finish plus 180, even plus 100 for a top 40 finish for Keegan.
So that's kind of the thing. It's like, I don't consider myself like this Keegan Bradley truther. I just look at the data every week, and every week he projects really well. He's playing well. It's not like we're trying to buy low on him over and over or anything. He's performing and people just aren't buying in. So I'll just keep riding the Keegan train.
And that's why the data is on point, because you just said it. You're not even a Keegan guy, but you know, all these signs point to you. We're going to put the link inside the description of this video for that splits tool you mentioned as well, which is just fantastic to check out. So you are a data guy and George is just a straight up team narrative. This is what I'm all about. Geographical location could imply different ball flight yardages based on weather elements. Hashtag team narrative. LOL. Love it, George. Always appreciate you as well. Yeah. Three putts for Parkers. Alex, fantastic, man. Always appreciate you.
Oh, absolutely. It's always a blast, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yo, absolutely. Ownership page, DFS. A lot of cool things happening, guys, over at FTNDaily.com. Quan, do you have the – you can flash this up. Or do, there you go. Look at this. FTNBets.com/free. FTNDaily.com/free. No excuse. Start your free trial. Take a look at the optimizer. Take a look at the content that Alex has and the rest of the golf team, the tools that we have as well. We are here for you guys, and these guys are cashing tickets left, right, and center. So thank you so much, Blickle. I got this weird feeling about JT too. I don't know why, but I kind of like to live in that 30 range as well. We'll see what happens there. Peace to Blickle. Scott Spratson here next. We're going to talk Carolina Panthers. They got a whole new squad there in Carolina. We're going to break it down next from a betting angle and a fantasy football angle. Still a lot to get to here on Mean Streets. Back in a couple. Scott Spratt in the house. Scott _ Spratt on the Twitter machine of FTN Fantasy. Writer, podcast host, all his rankings, his content over at FTNFantasy.com. Thanks for taking the time to hang out with me today. And patience in the green room as we talked through some golf plays. Did it make you want to lay a little sprinkle on a golf player? Hit the links? Or do you like to golf?
Absolutely. Huge golf fans, both playing and watching. Right. Can't believe you're talking about famous Californian golfers. Don't even bring up Phil with the shot at the Grand Slam here. I mean, come on. Let's hit all the major storylines, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. You should have been on with the conversation to bring that up. It's a good call, right? Phil Phil's in the news, and Phil was fantastic, right? In the setting records the U.S. Open. Was that last year? A couple years ago? A couple years ago, I think. Man, it's just wildness. That was a big shocking win for Phil. And I kind of like to see it as an older guy getting it done when everybody kind of counts him out, whether you like him or not. It was a super cool story. We're here to talk about the Carolina Panthers. So this may not be like a team that's like, whoa, like, these are going to great, you know, great team to break down here, but you know, it's an intriguing squad in my opinion, right? You got Frank Reich, former Panther, used to be a quarterback for Carolina in 1995. I think he played 3 games, like a couple touchdowns, a couple picks, nothing spectacular. Now the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. They were super aggressive, making the trade to move up to 1 with the Chicago Bears. This time last year, a lot of assets on the squad. You know, Christian McCaffrey of course, been one of the best players in football at his position in fantasy football, traded to San Fran last year. So they changed the guard there at the running back position, you know, traded their number one wide receiver in DJ Moore, which I thought would open up for Terrace Marshall. Maybe we can get into him in a little bit later on potentially. But this is a team now that has Bryce Young at the quarterback position, number one overall pick. A lot has been made of his size. Miles Sanders coming off a career year in Philadelphia. Jonathan Ringo is a wide receiver. I think we were together at the NFL draft on our FTN Network YouTube page when he was selected by the Panthers. Adam Thielen is on the team. DJ Chark. Hayden Hurst is a new addition to the squad as well. They got a lot of new additions on this Carolina team. What do you make overall of their team? We can get into their fantasy assets in a little bit, but what do you make of some of the I don't know if there's a team, Scott, across the league that is looking this different on offense compared to a year ago.
Yeah, to me, it is a little bit encouraging. It does sort of seem like there's a little bit more plan to what's been going on. I really feel like during the Matt Rhule era, like they were making all of these like small improvements, but it was still very much the college team building mindset where, hey, like Teddy Bridgewater is going to make us a little bit better than we were before. Sam Darnold's going to make us a little bit better than we were before. It's a big risk to draft or to trade for and then draft Bryce Young, but at least it's the kind of shot where if it works out, it feels like the team could be building toward the future. And they've been building much more from the line, kind of the inside out old school philosophy where some of these cheaper veterans at wide receiver in the skill positions, to me, it makes a lot of sense. I don't know if it's going to help you from betting on the overs for 2023 per se, but yeah, I think it's a good plan. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Hey, do you think it was the right call to take Bryce Young at 1? Was that your number one quarterback in the draft? Would you have gone CJ Stroud? I was kind of a CJ Stroud guy. I'm
a big Anthony Richardson guy. For me,
would you have taken him first overall?
I would have. So this is maybe a little bit of the Cam Newton halo effect of how fun it was to watch him be the centerpiece of your team. But like unquestionably the best athlete at the position, really big, really great arm, all of those things. To me, his poor accuracy was a bit overstated because one, Florida receivers can't catch the ball. And two, he threw a disproportionate number of his passes downfield where you have a lower expected catch rate. That was Cam Newton's whole deal before he hurt his shoulder where like, yeah, his numbers were bad too, but he was throwing the ball 20 yards downfield all the time. And so I think from a real world perspective, not that poor accuracy relative to the other guys, just an aggressive mindset that I really like.
Do you have any, I believe Richardson has the highest ceiling of the four, including Will Levis in the conversation. Are you worried about the height when it comes to, all this talk about? I mean, you don't see a quarterback go first overall with, you know, that small, Scott.
It's definitely unusual. I'm growing less concerned by the height, still very concerned about the weight, which we can get into, but with the height side of things, I've been doing some research on this. The average snap weighted height of quarterbacks has dropped by a full inch over the last 10 years. So in one way, we've been going that way. And looking at some of the advanced charting data that we have at FTN, like looking at routes run and stuff, over the last couple of years, the quarterbacks that are 6 feet and under have been throwing to the same percentages on all the route types as the guys that are 6 feet and over. There's a lot of diversity on who the names are with guys like Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield. And it's like, There's some kind of weird mishes and matches there, but there doesn't seem to be anything in the data to support the idea that he can't work the middle of the field, like he can't throw certain types of routes. I think that the height isn't necessarily the restrictive piece there. So, you know, I feel a little bit more optimistic about the height than I would have a few weeks ago. It's just the weight, the fact that he's so small, he's like 40 pounds smaller than me. Like I'm really worried that he's going to get hurt, but I think he can be successful if he can stay on the field.
And we do believe he's going to be the week one starter. I mean, they opened up camp with Andy Dalton taking first team reps. And just recently, of course, they transitioned into him taking first team reps. I do believe that he is going to be the week one starter for this team. There's no question. What do you think about Frank Reich and his coaching abilities? Because he's done some good things. You know, he did some good things with Carson Wentz, and Carson Wentz, you know, had some MVP votes en route to the Super Bowl. Of course, he blew out his knee, unfortunately for him. And then, you know, he did some great things with Nick Foles coming in. And I just feel like in Indy over the past little bit, it's just, it's kind of like Carolina, like you said, patchwork here and there to try to, you know, they lost Cam Newton, and in Indy they lost Andrew Luck, and they've just been trying to figure it out for a couple of years over there. And then they got their guy Richardson. But what do you make of Frank Reich and really him coaching up to the strengths of Bryce Young?
Yeah, I feel like the Colts' problems were a lot more personnel related and like poor injury luck related, things along those lines, not about the X's and O's specific to the coach. I feel like Reich is a good coach, and I feel like he has a chance to be really successful. The most interesting thing of it is that Reich himself, you mentioned he was a former Panthers quarterback, but he's 6'4", like classic traditional pocket passer. And every quarterback he's ever used has been 6'4" or 6'5". Not just Wentz. He brought in Phillip Rivers to be that for that random year for the Colts. Like, even Jacoby Brissett is 6'4".
Matt Ryan's so probably 6'4" too.
He is. So like, we're going from there to 5'10", like maybe, like if we're being generous. It's I think it's great. I love to see like an older coach learning some new tricks here. I feel like that's probably a sign of development and growth.
Yeah. It's going to be tough, man. 5'10" to look over those offensive linemen. You talk about the weight too. Taking sacks, protecting him is key. I remember just a couple years ago, Carolina drafted all defenders. Like, this is a team that just, you know,
Matt Rule's first draft.
Yeah, that's right. It was just, I think six, if memory serves me right, six defenders they took. And it was pretty rare to see a team do that. And yeah, they went all in on defensive players. Some worked out, some certainly didn't. But like, having the offensive line protect Bryce Young, I mean, that's not breaking any news, Scott, protecting a young quarterback. We can get into Miles Sanders a little bit. Maybe they lean on a veteran back in Miles Sanders early on in his playing career. Mm-hmm. Do you want to roll through the schedule? Like, we may not feel like it's a good exercise at 7.5 wins to go over, but this is what I want to do with all of, I did see a golf question there. Caden Luke, I'm sorry. Maybe we can get that towards the end of the show. We just did finish with Alex Blickle. Reach out to Alex Blickle one on Twitter. He's really good. And maybe I'll get him to come on the show after and answer that question, or we can get to it a little bit later on. But I just want to do this with all my guests, like kind of roll through the schedule and like we can chalk up a win or a loss. It's kind of a fun exercise. Things will change. Let's walk through this. Week one at Atlanta. Win, loss.
Loss. Falcons are going to win that division.
Ooh, I like it. I like it. That was my question next. Falcons are going to win the division. Okay, hold that thought. Week two, at home, their home opener, inside the division against the Saints.
That's a loss.
That's a loss. In Seattle, week three.
Loss.
That's a loss. Minnesota at home.
That's a win.
Oh, okay, nice. Minnesota still frauds, I take it. week five, in Detroit to take on the Lions.
That's a loss.
That's a loss. Week six, in Miami.
Loss.
Yeah, figured that. They got the bye week seven out of the bye. They're at home against the Texans.
That's a win.
That's a win. They're at home again against the Colts.
Win again. That may be Anthony Richardson's first start.
Okay, week nine. So you're in the camp that it's not going to be Anthony Richardson. It's going to be maybe Gardner Minshew to start.
I think at least a month of Minshew, yeah.
Okay. I mean, he knows the system that Steichen, you know, being from Philadelphia, they're familiar with each other, so I dig that call. That'd be fun, right? Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, back right out of the
flex that the Thursday night right now. Just do it.
Just do it. Okay, well, they are week 10 Thursday night football in Chicago.
Flex that out. That's a loss.
That's a loss. Okay. Week 11 at home to the Cowboys.
Big loss.
Big loss. Week 12 in Tennessee.
Win. I think the Titans could have a fall from grace. Look at their early schedule. It's really brutal. So they actually could be down enough to actually unload some of their players at the trade deadline. Maybe Derrick Henry even, if they're sitting at like 1-5 or whatever. So the Titans may be looking at Levis in a full on rebuild by then.
Yeah. And I don't think that they should sign Hopkins. They're just so far away. I don't think that'd be a great fit. Okay. So Tennessee lost week 12. Agree to probably see Levis at that point. Week 13 in Tampa.
Win.
Week 14 in Nolens.
Loss.
loss. Week 15, against the Falcons again.
Loss again.
Loss again, because the Lions win the division. Green Bay, week 16, at home.
Loss.
Loss. Oh, yeah, this team is not going over 7.5. Week 17, at Jacksonville. Another loss.
Well, that could be a sneaky win if the Jags have already clinched that South. So let's throw a win in there just for fun.
Let's give them a win. Yep. Let's give them a win. So they're at 6 W's. They wrap up at home against Tampa Bay, which is a winnable game.
Win. They're getting back to 7. Getting back to 7 wins, not getting over 7.5. I think that sounds pretty right.
The key there, sounds fair too.
Like, I think it's pretty clear painting the picture with some of the really bad teams on the schedule and a lot of the teams being in the same division that the Panthers do have a very easy schedule this year. And by DVOA, they actually have the 4th easiest projected schedule. The trick is that everyone else in the division, because they're all playing each other and because they're playing the AFC South and playing the NFC North, which doesn't have Aaron Rodgers anymore, it's all really easy. New Orleans has the easiest, Atlanta the 2nd easiest, and Tampa Bay the 6th easiest projected schedule. This division, it's just, it's really sad, and it's got a sad, easy schedule this year.
I was looking for the easy, hard schedule, Quan, that we had. I think I just removed it from the back end, but Scott just gave it to us beautifully. And that's what I said. Yeah, that's what I said a couple weeks ago. It's just like, well, I mean, he does have it. But you see like some of the teams inside the division here, and it's just like not a great division. Walk me through the Falcons. Walk me through, since we're on the NFC South and we're doing Carolina, we'll break here in a minute. But walk me through why you like this team to win the division, because there may be some, you know, Falcons fans watching because of, you know, how familiar they will be with Carolina and the division. What do you like about Atlanta?
Well, this is not a pro Desmond Ridder take. I hate to tell you, I just honestly feel like Arthur Smith has built an offense that is as close as we can get, except maybe Kyle Shanahan division, to being quarterback proof, with the heavy reliance on the play action passing game that I think can work with even a below average starter at quarterback. And so much of it comes down to the fact that the Falcons, I think, are just more motivated to win than either the Panthers or the Bucs are. The Panthers more interested in the long term and developing Bryce Young to hopefully be a good team in 2 or 3 years. Tampa Bay being just kind of stuck. You know, they invested so heavily in the Tom Brady run, and now that that's over, they have major cap issues. They don't really have any easy opportunities to improve their team. They have even worse than the Falcons at quarterback situation, with maybe Kyle Trask being the starter there. If Baker Mayfield couldn't cut it for the Panthers, I'm not sure that the Bucs are going to be the answer to that answer either. So really, to me, it's just the Falcons are competing with the Saints. And while the Saints have been amazing on defense for like a decade now, that defense is getting really, really old. So I'm concerned. And, you know, Andy Dalton was fine last year, so I'm not sure how much of an upgrade Derek Carr can even be for them at quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe slightly, but it's not like it's world breaking. Like, I do like the Saints, but I told a buddy that I would not be shocked if it was the Falcons, and he's kind of drinking the Saints Kool-Aid at the moment. But just the way the offensive line, I think, is underrated. You mentioned, you know, Bijan with running attack, and I think we can expect a little bit more from Kyle Pitts. Like, I know expectations are extremely high, but he's a good player, and he's going to be a great player in the NFL. And Drake London is a definite alpha wide receiver who popped off really when Desmond Ridder took over under center.
Kyle Pitts was 6th among tight ends in yards per route run last year. He was good. His issues were all fantasy related. So people
fantasy related
get over that.
Right. Fine. Yeah. Yeah. He's going to be just fine. He is a complete mismatch. He's going to be a great player in the league. Let's take a quick break, Scott, if you don't mind. Got to dive into some of the weapons. We'll switch gears a little bit from a, you know, a team standpoint into like a fantasy standpoint, where some of these guys are going, which wide receiver you like to take in Carolina, and really what to expect from Miles Sanders. Can he be a bell cow back in Carolina? How much will they lean on him? We'll talk about the backfield and a few of their assets here next. Keeper Lock will be back in just 2 minutes. Chris Meany, Scott Spratt here with you, Mean Streets on Game Plus Network. The Falcons, by the way, are +250 to win the NFC South, and they're +125 to make the playoffs. And I think if they get in, they're probably getting in via winning the division, although the NFC is completely wide open. I suppose they could sneak in as a wild card team there, but I really do like Seattle. We went through Carolina's schedule. We gave them 7 wins. But let's talk about them from a fantasy standpoint, some of their assets. We talked a little bit about Bryce Young there. These are ADPs from Underdog Fantasy. Of course, things will change just a little bit, but this is the average draft position. I tweeted this out earlier, and somebody's like, whoa, 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 why do you have Mingo ranked ahead of Thielen? These aren't my rankings. These are just average draft position over at underdogfantasy.com, best ball drafts. Bryce Young, QB 22 on average, 236th overall. Thoughts on him from maybe a super flex standpoint? Have you taken any shares on him in best ball as like a late stack? I think for me personally, what I want to say is I agree with you on Anthony Richardson. I think in a rookie only, in a super flex, Anthony Richardson should be the first quarterback off the board. And for me, two super flex rookie only drafts so far, and Anthony Richardson has been the second overall pick behind Bijan in all of those drafts so far. Talk to me about Young from a fantasy standpoint, best ball, super flex, any interest?
It makes a little bit more sense from best ball because I do think he's going to start from week one, which I'm not sure I feel that way about a lot of the other rookie quarterbacks, but I just don't necessarily love him from a fantasy perspective this year. It's probably a pretty good offensive line for a rookie quarterback, but I think that's going to mean more handoffs than like great success for Young. And Young, relative to some of the other rookies, in particular Richardson and Levis, doesn't run as much and I think may run even less in the NFL given how small he is. He's going to need to keep himself safe. Like, he's athletic, but I think that's more about extending plays within the pocket and throwing than it is about running, and that's just not really fantasy friendly from a strategy perspective.
Will they lean on Miles Sanders then? Coming off a career season, got paid, you know, double-digit touchdowns, over 1,000 yards after scoring zero touchdowns 2 years ago in the NFL. Is this a guy that's going to battle with Chuba Hubbard, or do you feel like he could be close to a bell cow running back? Can he get back to where he was when he broke out as a rookie,
yeah,
catching like 40 plus passes? Do you think that's a possibility?
I, from a receiving perspective, I do. So his targets have fallen from 63 as a rookie to 52, 34, and 26 the last four seasons. And you're like, yikes, like clearly he didn't make it work as a receiver, but he actually had a 20% receiving DVOA rate as a rookie, which is really, really good. I think that's just the Jalen Hurts offense that he was playing in, and that wasn't something that they asked from him. The Panthers, I think, will ask it more, and I think Sanders is an effective receiving back and will get that work. Probably enjoy a 70-30 type of split over Chuba Hubbard in particular. My only issue here is that Sanders, like so much of his rushing success last year came because of the Eagles. Number two in run block win rate, Sanders averaged 2.73 yards before contact. That was third highest among running backs. Yeah, you know, the Panthers can run block, but it's just not going to be as good as it was for the Eagles last year. So Sanders isn't going to be the same unbelievably efficient player he was last year.
Yeah, when he broke onto the scene, he was like one of four players with like 40 grabs, 500 receiving yards, 800 rushing yards, 4.5 yards per carry. And there with like Dalvin Cook and CMC and Alvin Kamara, you're right. I mean, it hasn't been used that way. I think he could be. What about the weapons in the receiving game? Mingo is a guy that they just drafted. Adam Thielen is a veteran wide receiver. I don't want to say he's fallen off, but a rough couple of years. He's been a touchdown machine, really, with Kirk Cousins over the past couple seasons. A big red zone target for him. DJ Chark, another guy, can stretch the field a little bit, has had some issues staying healthy. And then there's other guys on this team, you know, like Terrace Marshall, Laviska Shenault. Maybe one of those two can break out as like a potential sleeper in your opinion. But if you had a choice, you're sitting there on the board, you really can only pick one of these guys if you want. Which way do you go?
For me, it's Thielen. You said he's fallen off, but it really hasn't been that steep a decline. Averaged 15 games over the last 3 years, averaged 70 catches, 789 yards, and 10 touchdowns. So it's a profile that leans into the touchdown scoring, and yeah, it probably won't be as good as it was in Minnesota, but Thielen is 6'2" and 200 pounds. I think people assume by his, let's say, appearance that maybe he's not that big or athletic of a wide receiver, but he actually is. And I think he has this like weird ability to get open in short areas in the end zone. It's just like a knack of where the holes in the zone are, and it's really worked for him. He's always averaged really good like red zone target rates or expected touchdown rates in the red zone. So to me, he's the target on the Panthers as both consistent target volume and the touchdown upside, whereas everybody else I think has one or the other, but not both.
Yeah, lean with a veteran wide receiver. I dig it. Is there a sleeper? Like if Chark goes down, is there somebody else that can step up and garner any attention from a fantasy standpoint? Is there anything? Just we'll say this. We'll get you out of here on this. Any final thoughts on this Carolina team from a fantasy football standpoint?
I guess some of the preseason stuff would have you believe that Terrace Marshall and Laviska Shenault are the sleepers. Frank Reich even told reporters that he wanted to do some Deebo Samuel stuff with Shenault this season.
I did hear that
he probably also wants to do some Patrick Mahomes stuff with Bryce Young, and like chances are those they aren't that good as players. So like I would pass on some of those sleeper options with the Panthers, maybe look on other teams.
30 seconds. Where does Ringo rank for you off the top of your head? And like, should he be a target for people looking for a wide receiver or among rookies after those big four go off the board? Do you think about him, or are you going another way like Rice or Reed, or are you going to Hyatt? Are you going a different way?
I mean, I had those guys in a similar range, but I think Mingo makes sense because at 6'2 and 220, he's like that power slot guy. we've seen players like Amon-Ra St. Brown have early success with that type of build and skill set. So it's kind of weird, but I think it could be one where he hits his stride more quickly in the NFL than some other, you know, more downfieldy type of wide receivers.
Scott Spratt, you are fantastic bringing in the advanced stats here over these couple of blocks. I really do appreciate it. Scott_Spratt, rankings, content, everything over at ftnfantasy.com. Hopefully we can do this again before the season does get underway, because I always just soak in all the knowledge that you bring to the table. Appreciate you, dude. We're going to switch gears here a little bit. Got some MLB picks. We're going to take a look at the way too early NHL Stanley Cup odds as well here on Mean Streets. We'll be back in a couple. Hang tight. Thanks, Scott. Welcome back in. Let's take a look at the way too early NHL Stanley Cup odds futures via FanDuel here. The Avs are up at the top at 8-1. The Leafs, the Oilers, both at 11-1. I mean, the Leafs, it's just a sucker bet. Honestly, I had to say it. Sorry, guys. I just had to say it. I understand why they're here, but they shouldn't have the second shortest odds to win the Stanley Cup. Edmonton at 11-1 is not too bad. That's probably the best number you're ever going to get. With the Edmonton Oilers, you know, I think that they have figured it out in goal. I know Stuart Skinner was good this season, but ultimately you need a goalie. You just need a goalie to win you a couple rounds or two. And the Oilers just didn't have it there with Stuart Skinner. Maybe his first taste, playoff experience. Maybe, you know, he can learn a thing or two from this past year. Golden Knights at 13-1, Bruins at 13-1, the Devils, Hurricanes, Lightning also at 13-1, the Rangers at 15-1, the Stars at 17, the Panthers and the Kings at 20-1, the Wild at 32-1, the Flames at 32, and the Penguins at 35-1. I'm not seeing a ton of value on the board. You know, you guys know how I feel about the Stars. You know, Domi and Dinanoff are unrestricted free agents, so they're going to have to find a way to, I say replace them, but they can't just be a one-line team. They're going to have some production on some of their other lines. So they're kind of interesting to me at 17-1. Peter Laviolette, now the coach of the Rangers, at 15-1, but some pieces moving away from them. I think we'll see a Kings team be aggressive again through free agency, you know, get a goalie, you know, bolster the blue line just a little bit. I still really like where that team is at. You know, they ran into the Oilers over the past couple of years, but they gave them a go in both seasons. At 20-1 is super intriguing. There's teams that are not on this list that I think will make a leap forward, like the Buffalo Sabres, like the Ottawa Senators. But those are two teams that I just don't think will win the Stanley Cup. If I had to pick one in that 13-1 range before we get out of here, you know, the Atlantic is pretty much loaded. You know, you got the Leafs, you have the Panthers who made the run. You got Detroit, you got Ottawa, you got Buffalo, you know, making a run as well. I think Tampa, what was that, 13-1, Quan? I think that they're going to be back into the conversation. They just played so much hockey over the past couple of years. I know that they're a little bit older, but I think that this is another team that's going to be aggressive. You know, you got the state tax there, which is beneficial for some players, so maybe they can garner a free agent or two on the cheap. But at 13-1, I think it's pretty intriguing. The team here that may be ready to take that next step could be the Devils. At 13-1 as well. I you know, they're going to find a way to lock up Timo Meier and I think Jesper Bratt. And they just have some young kids like Hughes on the back end. I think that they got some nice young pieces inside the organization, that this is a team in the Metro, kind of a change of guard in the Metro. See a lot of those teams there. They're all Atlantic teams in the Metro. Where's the Penguins? Where's the Capitals? You know, the Blue Jackets are making some noise, but they're not going to be ready. The Hurricanes, I think that they need something offensively, but there's some teams there in the Atlantic atop the board where the Metro could be pretty appealing. So I'd take a look at the Devils, maybe a little bit of a sprinkle, and the Kings there at 20-1. We got an MLB pick and a prop here for you next on Mean Streets. Hang tight. Back in, it's the Cincinnati Reds. You guys know it. I mean, this team been drinking this Reds Kool-Aid. It's tasty. It's delicious. They're cashing tickets for us over 4.5 runs today against Daniel Lynch of the Kansas City Royals. 16 1/3 innings so far on the resume this season. He's allowed 19 hits, 10 runs, and 5 walks. Allowed a homer in his last game. He's got a high fly ball rate. I know Kauffman isn't the best ballpark for hitters, but this Reds team is just feeling it right now. They've won 7 of the last 10 games. We gave 40-1 for them to win the division last week. And now that's gone. It's like 10-1 in some spots. They're just 2.5 games back of the Central lead in the National League. So I like them. Moneyline minus 110. Kansas City is now the worst team in baseball. You guys see what happened in Oakland last night? Not enough time to get into it, but these guys went to the ballpark, sell. Oakland went on to win their seventh straight game, and now the Royals are the worst team in baseball. So the Reds, moneyline over 4.5. I'm going to be taking both of those bets. And then like Framber Valdez here, this is a little juiced. But Framber Valdez, he's a 9K per nine dude this so far this season. If he can get six innings here against the Nationals, which I do think he can, Washington doesn't strike out a whole lot, but Framber Valdez has pitched at least six innings in 10 of his 13 outings this season. He keeps the ball on the ground. He's just a 60% ground ball rate. He's going to keep the ball on the ground here today against the Nats, and I like the over 5.5. And then Andrew Haney over 5.5 against his former team in the Halos. And that 55-1 World Series odds for the Angels, that's going to go away pretty soon. That team is buzzing right now, but I think Haney gets six strikeouts against them tonight. Good luck around the diamond. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Cheers.